People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. I am Davis Matic. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I'm joined by my buddy, Ryan Doubt. You guys can follow him on Twitter at RC Doubt. He is a former professional poker player, former professional DFS player, which we definitely get into in the episode, and now is just kind of trading and hanging out in the crypto space full time. He is one of the OG CryptoPunk adopters and very busy and interested in the decentralized finance space. So I kind of just picked his brain about what it's like to exist in that world right now. A reminder that we are sponsored by Underdog Fantasy. You can get a free wager for $10 inside of their Pick'em game or their Rivals game right now using the promo code GRID. A link to their app will be found in the description for the show. Now let's go ahead and get into the episode. All right, everyone, welcoming into the show, Ryan Doubt. He previously joined the show in an episode people actually really liked. That was, I think, one of the most listened episodes of 2021. And funnily enough, I remember I titled it Overaggressive in All Nodes because that was in your Twitter bio. And now you changed it. You're underaggressive across all nodes now.
I actually think it was always underaggressive, but I thought you did it on purpose.
Oh, well, then that's on me.
Yeah, I thought it was a good balance.
There we go. Yeah, so how's it going, bud? How are you enjoying NFT summer?
I hope it lasts through NFT fall. Otherwise, I'm going to be bag holding some shit. But yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's so I have just recently gotten into like the minting and there's just so much. But it is the most fascinating movement in crypto since I have been paying attention to it. Like this, all of this stuff, the NFTs and the decentralized finance, like even when we did the show, I want to say like 6 months ago, 7 months ago, maybe, I feel like we were not even thinking about all this stuff. Like you didn't even have a punk then.
No, I didn't have a punk then. I don't know if at the time I was doing very much DeFi. Actually, it must have been last year because I remember vividly that Bitcoin was right about 15,000. So it right. must have been like November of last year. So I wasn't, really doing much DeFi at that point. Yeah. We've had two explosions in the past year in crypto that have totally changed how everybody looks at everything.
Yeah. So I guess one of the places that I want to start with, because we talked a lot about poker and DFS last time that you were on the show, and we don't need to go over that territory again. If you guys want to listen to the first episode with Ryan, I think it still holds up and I still think it would be very good. But this is just a personal curiosity. And I've seen this with some of my other buddies who I'm in these Discords and everything with, but they've been making so much money and have been so busy with cryptos and minting NFTs and buying and selling and trading these, that like week one of the DFS season got here and they were like, who cares? Like what am I even doing registering for all of these games or caring about these tournaments when NFT roulette is so much more profitable?
Yeah. I mean, that's basically how it is for me. So I can talk more specifics now. At the beginning of last season, I think I loaded up my accounts with something like $80,000.
Yeah.
By the end of the Super Bowl, I had something like 320,000. if I had just bought Bitcoin with that 80,000, I would have done better than I did in DFS, in forexing. And coming into this season, I was like, you know what, it's even more lopsided than that, because I mean, I'm not a tournament player. I will maybe, you know, fire one GPP lineup that I put in the small entry stuff.
Under aggressive, but, across all nodes.
Yeah. So I mean, mainly cash. And the thing with cash is you're registering all week long. And then like the last 10 minutes, you're canceling off your unfilled heads ups. You're searching for contests. Like, I don't want to be like mashing buttons for pretty low EV. I mean, at this point, it's hard to think that my ROI in NFL cash games for a main slate are more than like 8%. And that would be on, you know, not that high a number of buy-ins compared to how it was in the past.
Sure.
You know, people are just better now. So I don't think it's really worth the time. So week one, I played the three main showdown slates. That was it. Just cash and just the three showdowns, Thursday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football. I didn't play the main slate. I was around to help, you know, some buddies with the main slate, and I looked at the lineups, but I didn't actually even sit. Had no interest.
First NFL main slate Sunday in what, like 8 years probably, for it to not be that way?
Yeah.
So what I mean, what was that like? Did you watch the games on Sunday, or were you just like out, you know, walking the dogs and playing tennis and stuff instead?
Yeah, I played tennis on Sunday morning, and then I came back. I took a glance at the Sunday Night Football stuff. I worked on that for a bit, not too long. And that was about it. Like it was pretty relaxing to not have to, because I mean, I'm Pacific time. I, you know, in the past would wake up at 6 a.m,
right,
do an hour of work, walk the dogs, eat breakfast, do another 2.5 hours of work, and then kind of veg out. And in the past, I wasn't a big game watcher either. Like I would skip the 10 a.m. games and like go disconnect. I'd usually watch one of the better 1 p.m. games, and I'd watch the Sunday Night Football game, but I never watched the 10 a.m. games. Generally, they were the worst set of games, and
sure.
I didn't want to be by the computer more. So, you know, I've never been like in love with DFS. Like I just kind of did it because NBA was more interesting to me than NFL as a viewership product. So I was a little happier watching the NBA games, but yeah, I've never been like obsessed with DFS. So it was pretty easy for me to kind of cut the cord on playing main slates this season.
Yeah, because I, you know, what hooked you was not like the, oh, I know that Antonio Gibson is going to break out this week because I saw X, Y, or Z when I was watching the game. It was turning money into more money and like the game elements, right? Yeah. Like the how it all fits together, game selection and things like that, because that is more attuned to how poker worked, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So NFTs.
Yeah.
Where I mean, we did your Genesis story for what an interesting time. Like we literally did the show like right before all of this stuff started to explode. So what was your Genesis story with NFTs and decentralized finance? Cause I think they go hand in hand.
Yeah. So with DeFi, I knew DeFi was going on during last fall. Last summer I had heard about it, but I was like, you know, I'm not going to bother. I mean, everything seemed like a meme at that point with SushiSwap and like, we didn't understand that these would become major players in the game, but, it all seemed very meme based at the time. And I kind of ignored it, and I didn't want to jump in during football season because I didn't want to, you know, give it half my attention. But then in January, I've been a Luna bull for years. The Terra network, you know, I invested really early, and I like their vision for how to build things. And I was looking into Mirror Protocol before I had ever done anything with DeFi, and I was like, wait a minute, they're offering me like 300% yields on Amazon stock. This doesn't make sense. And of course it really doesn't make sense, but it's token emittance. So I started looking into it. I started doing that. And then I jumped onto Uniswap and Sushi. And then soon after I got extremely lucky because then I started looking into Binance, and I got on Pancake pretty early. And then everything there exploded. And, you know, so DeFi, you know, was one of the luckiest things that's happened in the past, you know, 10 years. But it's also kind of the future, right? I mean, it's yeah. how things could work. You can't look at, you know, going to your bank account or putting money in a CD or an IRA and getting like 0.5% a year when you could be the one getting the fees for people to trade. That's how it should be. If you're providing liquidity, you should be the one getting the fees, and those fees usually add up to a certain percentage a year, and it's better than bank APYs. So it's pretty nice to get interest on things you like.
Yeah. And I get this feedback all the time, and I bet you do too, whenever you meet like a normal person out in the world, or like, I don't know if you read the replies to like an NYT opinion piece, but like, oh, crypto is only used for speculation. There's no real world use for it. No one is doing anything with Bitcoin. No one's doing anything with Ethereum. And I'm like, I'm staking my ETH and my USDC and all of these things, and it's doing all of these things for me. And it's replacing a savings account. It's replacing all of these things. And it's like, it's literally already happening. Like the democratization of finance is literally already happening.
Yes. But I also have people on the other end of the spectrum who are so into crypto that they think that 200% yields are sustainable forever. And they don't understand that the Uniswap right. model is yeah. the only true model of how things should work. Like you should only be getting fees for coins you provide. And that's how it will be in the future. But right now, you know, we're all playing the Ponzi scheme game, the Ponzi-nomic game. It's not really Ponzi, but you know, where we farm and dump and can print better yields for short periods of time. But it really is, you know, going to change the future of finance.
Yeah. And you know, I do think you make a great point, because I kind of get middled between the two people. Cause like my best IRL friend is like a Bitcoin maxi. Like he's like, you know, he'll send texts like, oh, you know, if you do the math for every person in the world that has a cell phone, there's only like 0.003 whatever Satoshis yeah. for everyone. And then also, you know, I'm in these NFT discords where they're like, how can I pay for a vacation in Ethereum? Like, you yeah. know, and it's kind of like these two worlds, and it's so fascinating. And one of the things that is really interesting to me now that never really interested me that much before is how far behind governments are behind society. Mm-hmm. Like these people who are trying to do taxes for NFT stuff, like the IRS is not going to make it. Like they, you know what I mean? Like they just have no idea what to do with this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I tune out a lot of the regulation stuff because it's just so much noise. Like the SEC, the regulatory stuff, what goes on in Congress, because we've been hearing about it for years and no progress is ever made. Right.
Right.
It's almost like Tether FUD to me. Like I was hearing about new Tether FUD a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, how do you even pay attention to it? You know, like we've been hearing about this since 2017. So I tune most of it out, but the recent thread by Brian Armstrong, the CEO of Coinbase, about how he was kind of strong-armed by the SEC, and he kept like complying and looking for clarification and kept receiving none.
Nothing.
Right. I mean, that resonated with me a lot. And you know, it's hard to try to be somewhat honest about paying your taxes on it and not really even know the rules still. Like they try to clarify things, but then you hear different things in different places, and you know, I pay, but I don't know if I'm doing the right thing, because they don't know. They don't know either.
Sure.
So And I'm lucky that 2020 was still easy for me, because I wasn't doing DeFi or NFTs. But 2021, I can't even imagine what I'm going to have to go through trying to figure out what
I'm for the first time in my life, I'm going to pay someone. And I'm not paying someone to be like, oh, I definitely think you're going to do a much better job of this than I will. But just to build in like a layer of protection, if the IRS yeah. comes back and is like, well, this is all wrong, and I'm going to be like, you got to help me because I think that is, I'm going to label a stamp of financial advice. You know, people say not financial advice. I'm going to say financial advice, pay someone, pay like a licensed person or institution to do your taxes, because assuming that if that's even a concern to you, you've probably done very well on all of these things over the last year. And it's a very good idea to have an institution behind you in that circumstance, even if it's just as an intermediary, right? Like an intermediary between you and the IRS.
Yeah, for sure. That I'm 100% doing it. That's a very good idea.
Yeah.
You can't allow yourself to be at more risk than you should.
No. And I bought a house this year too, which like adds like another L. It's going to be a nightmare. I can't even talk about it anymore. It gives me anxiety. Okay. First NFT you bought, was the first one you bought a punk? Is that what happened?
Yes. So I had heard about punks. I had heard about Top Shot. But at the time,
you FUDded us on Top Shot.
I did because to me, the thing I have a mixed view on Top Shot.
I also have mixed views on Top Shot.
I think it's brilliant in a number of ways. I think it's really cool. It obviously has really high demand. I think it's a great way to organize and have a marketplace, and it fixes every problem that traditional card markets have, right? Like if I have, say, I don't know, like a Willie Mays card and I want to sell it and I want to get the right price for it, the best buyer might be some dude in Idaho that I'm never going to find in my life. And I'm not going to, and like, I have to actually physically send the card. It's a nightmare. I mean, my friends who deal with physical cards have like tables in their basement and it's taking over their entire basement. And it just seems like a huge time suck. And Top Shot fixes all of this, and it has incredible demand, and opening packs or like trading packs for money is just like, it's a great sweat and it's a lot of fun collecting. But I didn't like that. It was super centralized compared to most crypto things.
It's 100%. Super centralized. They made the Flow blockchain to make Dapper Labs and Top Shot work, basically.
Right. The second thing I didn't like was that the pricing didn't make sense to me at the time because you know, for instance, Luka rookie cards were less expensive than
Mason Plumlee season two series debut moments. Exactly. Right.
So the pricing didn't make sense. The fact that it was all free money where like, oh, I'm just going to hop into a queue for a pack and then I can either open the pack and sell the moments, or I could just sell the pack unopened and print every single time. All of that didn't seem sustainable to me, but I love the idea. Like it's brilliant. Right. So it's super mixed, but yeah, I was kind of FUDding it early. And I'd heard about punks, and the more I looked into it, the cooler it sounded. And it was my first foray into NFTs.
And I turned down splitting a punk for what would have been like $8,000 USD with a buddy. And I mean, obviously
January, I guess. So it was, like
it was right after we all got into Top Shot. Right. Yeah.
So
and I was like
6 or 8 ETH or something in January. Right.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, I just bought all these moments. Like I obviously have a lot tied up in Bitcoin and ETH. I don't want to create the taxable event of selling those. So like, I'm not going to do it.
10X at that time from 4 months earlier.
Yes. Yeah. It was already, you know, probably even more than 10X, whatever it was at the beginning of the month. So I will live with that regret forever. So what did you choose your punk for any specific reason? Like some people have like a, you know, a story or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just kind of going through the lowest priced ones. And this is how you should always approach a new project where you want to buy an NFT that already minted. You should look at the floor. You pick one that you think looks good, that's close to floor. You ask some buddies who already have it what they think, and you buy it. So what I did was I looked at the bottom like 50 or so. I picked something I liked. I sent it to a friend who had been, you know, collecting them. And he's like, wait a minute, that's my punk. I own that one, but I listed it for sale and I forgot and I was going to delist it. But if you want it, you can buy it. And I was like, well, now I have to buy it because, you know, you liked it and, you know, you were going to delist it. And he's being honest. So I bought it. And then I just started buying more and more. But yeah, it's interesting that to go back to the point of, you know, you didn't want to buy because it was already up 10X in 4 months. There's two ways. So like the way I look at it is I've had 5 once in a lifetime opportunities in 15 years, right? I had poker. I had DFS, I had Bitcoin, crypto in general, DeFi, and then NFTs, right? And there's two ways to look at it. One is that, you know, compared to the grand population, I'm an early adopter, and that's 100% true compared to, you know, 99.5% of people, I'm an early adopter. But I wasn't early. Like, I had heard about all these things earlier and not bought, and I waited and then got in later, right? So like, I got in poker probably 2004, and I had known people in 2003 who were already printing on Party Poker. And if I had gotten in a year earlier, I would have been a leg up for when everything went crazy, and I would have been in a much better position. Same with DFS. I got in late 2014, and people were grinding it in 2013. Same with crypto. I first heard about Bitcoin when it was under a dollar, and I had friends suggesting it when it was $20, and then I didn't buy until it was like $400 or $500.
Right.
Same with DeFi. I didn't get in last summer. I got in, you know, in January. Same with NFTs. I didn't get in, you know, late last year. I didn't get in 4 years ago with the original Larva Labs minting. I got in March. So like, just because you feel like you're late compared to where you heard, you might be early. And getting in March turned out to be very early compared to the majority of people who found NFTs appealing.
I still think that, actually, like, relatively speaking, on NFTs, I kind of had this galaxy brain moment actually on the show last week. I did it with Andy from Fractional Art. Yep. And I had not done like the minting and like the profile picture thing and everything. Like, I'd been vaguely aware, you know, I did the Top Shot thing and all that. And I kind of had this moment where like Web3 actually clicked for me, that like, oh, we're not going to have, you know, usernames and passwords and everything. Like, our wallet is going to be our identity and like the associated avatar with that identity. And like, it took a long time for the, and I have, you know, I've kind of seen it with Discord already. Like, you hop into different Discords, oh, like, you have a punk, like, that means a certain thing, or you have an ape as your avatar, like, that means a certain thing. And so I still think that probably the current form of NFTs existing, where like, it's a minting and then it's like a race to get your profit and stuff, like, that will not exist forever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like NFTs are very much a part of like what our life will be like in 10 years.
Oh yeah, 100%. So one thing is that if you just look at the amount of money spent on flexing in general,
yes,
like the average person who does pretty well, say somebody who makes $150,000 a year, let's say a single 29-year-old man who makes $150,000 a year, how much does he spend on nightclubs, on his car, on watches, on clothes, on expensive haircuts, on nice dinners for dates and things like that? Like, the amount spent on flexing is enormous, right? So when you combine the digital world with all that, the amount of flexing, I think, will go up, but the lion's share will probably shift to digital because, for one, there's less wear and tear, you know, like your Top Shot moment isn't going to degrade over time, like an ephemeral, you know, nightclub, night out in a nightclub.
Right.
And for two, you know, like you said, like, we're going to be so connected to everything in the web. Like, this is your identity, and, you know, you're going to represent yourself in some way. And the community aspect of it is a bit of a gift and a curse, right? So on one hand, if you have a strong community, take the Bored Apes, for instance. They probably have the strongest community aspect going on. Like, they're your cheerleaders, they're your supporters, they're the ones who, you know, like, having 4,000 unique people on Twitter with a Bored Ape avatar is massive, right?
For sure.
It incentivizes the founders to continue building and, you know, giving back to the community. They're almost getting derivatives for this. There's a lot of incentive. And then you have athletes who are, and famous people buying in to be in the club and then marketing it for free, right? Like, I don't think, you know, Steph Curry didn't pay directly for it. I'm pretty sure the money came from his, you know, one of his sponsorships, but
Right.
If Steph Curry with a Bored Ape avatar, his brother has one, like they're out minting stuff. They're out buying stuff. Like, right. Like that's free advertising from some of the most famous people on earth. You just can't like imagine a 6-month startup that was doing stuff like that. Right. Like getting free advertising from like,
yeah, if there was a parallel for this in the business world, everyone would be rushing all over to say like, yeah, they're the next Google or Apple or whatever.
Right. It's insane. So yeah, I mean, I think the interconnectedness with our wallet and our identification are just another part of it. And it's here to stay for sure. Not every NFT will be, you know, available on secondary market, like me getting a ticket to,
yeah,
you know, the 30th game of the season for the Lakers next season. And having that in my private gallery is not, nobody's going to buy that, but it's just going to become a way of life that we're going to have NFTs for everything. And some of them will have high secondary value. Some of the ones that we're valuing now will disappear. That's the other side of community. When things start going south and people leave the community for others, then that project no longer has value. So a lot of these are going to go to zero, but not all of them. And the better ones will stick around.
Yeah, and I mean there are, I mean for every good project, there's like 199 bad ones or whatever. Which I'm not even arguing that though. And I talked about this with Andy last week, like a defense mechanism for people who knew about NFTs, but were not aping in was like, oh, well, 99% of them are going to go to zero. So that means I don't have to do the due diligence. And it's just like, I mean, like what you said, it is a once in a lifetime opportunity to make money in like a really speculative space. And, you know, it seems like a good idea to kind of take advantage of that. So another thing I've really noticed the last couple of weeks is other blockchain protocols are starting to do NFTs. You know, Solana is doing them. I saw you ape into Tezos, which I really want to ask you about. But I guess to begin with, I mean, do you have thoughts on the Solana stuff? Like they're doing like derivative fake punks there. They're actually going for like a decent amount of money.
Yeah, I saw that. I think that's all nonsense. But at the same time, I as a punk owner, I'm not against it. Like, I think that, you know, brings more to the original, and people will mostly call that as a scam and a money grab. And for instance, there was a Bored Ape clone built on Solana that came out last week. They took the traits from the original Bored Apes and they minted new ones. And I don't think it sold out. And they had to change things a little bit because I think they were scared of legal repercussions. So they kind of printed out a picture, printed out a list of the traits, and then gave you a one-time shot to look at the picture and save it if you wanted. But they were a little bit worried about repercussions, and it didn't sell out. That was really positive to me that these copycat projects in the future won't, you know, continue doing well. That said, I bought some Solana NFTs and I bought some Tezos NFTs because I'm not a big Solana fan in general. I'm betting on it because it has, you know, SBF is the superstar of our generation, right? Like he's going to be the richest man in the world within 5 years, right? He's got a huge trading company that's going to be the Western version of Binance. He's, you know, he knows how to be an A-plus capitalist, as Timex would say. He's doing everything right. He's got a trading desk that's absolutely crushing in every single way. And he's a big Solana backer, and I just think it's too big to fail. And there's nothing stopping it from becoming the third highest market cap coin. And right now it's sixth or seventh. I haven't looked recently, but so I'm betting on it, but I'm not a huge fan of it. I just think, you know, there's a lot of layer one smart contract platforms, and it's not my favorite. So in my mind, I don't love it, but I'm still gonna, you know, bet that it's gonna pass Cardano and Binance Chain. But you know, I think it would be silly not to put a small percentage of my NFT portfolio in their NFTs, their early ones that aren't, you know, exact copies. Like I won't buy the Soul Punks, but I bought the DeGen Apes, I bought there's Solana Monkey business. I bought a couple other things, the Frax and the Synapses that I was minting today. And then Tezos, I was looking into because, you know, I bought the Tezos ICO back in 2016, I think. It took years to come out. And then everything's been like a very slow development. And I started seeing the sharper Twitter, you know, traders starting to shill Tezos a little bit. And I started looking at it and I was like, let me check out the DeFi and the NFTs. The DeFi was garbage. They're like way behind where other, you know, even Solana and others are. But their NFTs were really nice. They had a couple, you know, they had an OpenSea-like platform. They had kind of a nifty gateway-like platform, but a little worse. And I started looking into stuff and I bought a bunch because it seemed like a really good bet to make on both Tezos and their NFTs, because if Solana really does blow up, I don't think it'll be for NFTs. So maybe Tezos ends up the best smart contract platform to trade NFTs other than Ethereum, you know, where Ethereum, you know, people are limited by gas. So I wanted to bet more on Tezos. So I bought a bunch of stuff there.
Yeah. I mean, there's clearly a need or maybe not even a need, but I guess a desire for cheaper transactions. Like Ethereum has solved the fast transactions, right? They've done a very good job on that. One of the brilliant things about Ethereum, I guess, depending on who you ask, is that it has, because of the way it exists, it has the ability to kind of change and scale based on who is using it and what they're using it for. But no one would argue that, you know, paying $500 for a transaction in gas is good. And that hasn't existed for a while. I mean, now it's more like 50 to 80 bucks for most of the day. If there's a couple mints going on, it'll be much more than that. But it's still not good, right? Still, you would like to spend much less. So layer two solutions or other very fast, you know, large block size protocols, like they're people want that. People want to be able to have cheaper transactions. Like that's obvious.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't really buy the argument because, I mean, eventually things will shift and it's already getting better. But Tezos is also delegated proof of stake, which, you know, it's not using the electric consumption that some of the that Ethereum is right now, that Bitcoin is right now. So the people who are arguing stuff like that, they don't even have that argument on Tezos. So I like the idea of, you know, pick my three or four favorite layer one smart contract platforms and buy some early NFTs from them and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of proof of stake in theory a lot, which is that's like pretty contentious. Like lots of people really like proof of work, and I'm not saying proof of work is bad, but like I mean, it's the same reason that I was interested in DeFi protocols really early and staking and stuff, because I like the idea of not only like if you're staking something that can appreciate, the currency itself or the asset itself can appreciate, and you're also earning on top of that, which is like from a fighting inflation perspective, like that's very useful for me. So like I, you know, the idea of like ETH 2.0 and staking your ETH and getting both of the benefits, that's really interesting to me. But the BTC people really, really hate proof of stake, and they really, really hate the Ethereum proof of stake because of the pre-mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the strongest early arguments I heard for proof of stake over proof of work, not even environmental aspects, was imagine you wanted to 51% attack a coin, right? And you bought a bunch of hardware and attacked it, right? And you kill the coin. You still have value in that hardware to use it for other things, right? If you did that to a proof of stake chain, you would need to you would need to actually buy the tokens. And so you're increasing the value of the tokens. You're spending a lot of money. Then you kill it, and now you can't transition those funds anywhere. You just dumped it. So it's much harder to 51% attack a proof of stake network. And people don't really talk about 51% attacks anymore because the network started growing too big.
Yeah, because it's preposterous.
Yeah, it's insane. But early on, that was always the like one of the biggest concerns. And I thought that was a really cool argument where, you know, a proof of work can be fully attacked and the person attacking it doesn't lose any value because they still have this working hardware that they can shift over to another proof of works chain. But proof of stake, you can't, because you just lit money on fire killing something. I think, you know, there's room for all sorts of platforms in the future, and I think being a maxi on anything is probably pretty dumb.
That's where I've landed, and so like as a protocol, I still feel like Bitcoin is the best protocol, right? Like I do think that, but I think it's the best protocol at what it's asked to do. And where the true Bitcoin people lose me is where they try to make everything like an argument about scarcity, or like, how do you know they won't make more punks? And I'm like, well, I know they won't make more punks because the contract has been executed. And they're like, well, you know, Larva Labs, yada, yada. And I have gotten to the point to where I think that the biggest enemy to Bitcoin adoption has become the Bitcoin people, right? Yeah, like, because yeah, you don't want to learn anything from those people.
They're really cringe. And I would say I was kind of like you. Like, I would say up until probably mid to late last year, I was still a soft Bitcoin maximalist. I wasn't a Bitcoin maximalist, but most of the other coins I owned with the intention of flipping it for more Bitcoin, right? So I looked at my cryptocurrency net worth as the number of Bitcoin I had, or the value of my portfolio in terms of Bitcoin, and that shifted entirely with DeFi, and it's no longer the case. And I don't understand how they still look at it as a competitor, because it's not. I mean, for one, Bitcoin is pretty boring. Like, I can't.
Doesn't do anything.
The last time I used Bitcoin, like, when's the last time you sent a transfer in Bitcoin to somebody to pay them?
I actually do that because my IRL buddies, we've spent so long evangelizing each other that we actually do everything in Bitcoin. Yeah. But we don't do it because it's easy, and we don't do it because that's like the most functional way to do it. We do it as like an ideological thing. Like, it's like ideological between us.
I've probably done it maybe 3 or 4 times this year. And I use Ethereum every day. I use Luna every day. I use Solana more often. I use my NFTs. I talk about NFTs. I'm never using Bitcoin. And I mean, I've had Bitcoin the longest. I still believe in it. I still want, I'll never sell all my Bitcoin. I'm never going to become, you know, ETH maxi, but I just don't know how people who just sit and hold something can act like it's, you know, the future, right? The future is things that are used constantly, not things that are just held in, you know, a safe somewhere. They're both part of the future. Like, but things have definitely shifted. Like, I don't think about, you know, ETH is 0.08 Bitcoin anymore. I think of ETH as ETH. And
ETH is
that's
ETH.
What I, yeah, right. I mean, I still mainly, I mean, like when I buy NFTs on ETH, it's with the intention of getting more ETH generally. Or, you know, possibly getting more punks down the road. So like I am kind of gambling, but with these other networks, I haven't thought like that at all. I'm just like, this is just a long shot kind of asymmetric play on the network. And I'm looking at it as like probable that I take a loss on most of them, maybe at 10x or 20x's. But with the Ether ones, I actively try to not take losses, and I realize that. So in a way, I guess I am a little bit of an ETH maxi nowadays, where I try to accumulate more ETH with my trades.
Which is that is, I think, like the most common mindset amongst a lot of the NFT people that that I have come in contact with. Have a lot of my buddies in a Discord, the club NFT Discord that I'm in. It's the whole world of NFTs is just so fascinating to me. Like from a philosophical perspective, like a lot of the NFT stuff, I feel like it all ties into, like, you know, stuff I remember reading when I was like 20 about like Friedrich Nietzsche and Kant and Sartre, like you know, all the existentialism stuff, and like even like language and like what is an identity. It's all just so fascinating to me.
Yeah, even Sapiens type stuff, where we're, you know, humans looking for a connected story, and you know, these communities allow us to have, like, you know, some sort of connection with a group, an identity, right? And yeah, it's the most out of left field thing that I experienced with crypto or almost anything, because DeFi was a natural kind of, we'd heard about DeFi for a long time, but nothing ever materialized. And then it started happening and we ignored it. And then when we jumped in, like, okay, this is the future, even though right now it's a total Ponzi, it's the future. But NFTs were like, you know, all these, you know, rich nerds start buying crappy art, and what's the world come to, right? But it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's not at all, and then suddenly is kind of how it works. And like, I don't just, you know, there are people right now who have never bought any Bitcoin ever, who are fully onboarded on Ethereum, know how to use like smart contracts, know what Web 3.0 is. And that a year ago, 2 years ago, not a chance. Everyone bought Bitcoin first and then did Ethereum. And it's not that I certainly am not trying to like FUD Bitcoin or say that I don't love Bitcoin, because it does exactly what it's supposed to do. It's hard money. It's sound. It there's only 21 million. Right. My dollar cost average buy still goes off without a doubt every single week. But I don't know. My mental energy is spent on other stuff, because I don't even need to expend the mental energy on Bitcoin. It just does what it's supposed to do.
Right. That's how it should be in my view. I mean, if it's something that's sitting in our safe, like that's, you know, where we hold a percentage of our net worth, and we're happy with that, and we don't think about it too much, and we can use it to transfer large amounts of wealth across the world in, you know, 10 or 20 minutes. But it's not something we use every day, and it's not what we spend our energy on. And I think that's kind of how it should be. And I think it should stay, you know, number one or number two. I think the flipping is becoming increasingly more likely as the usage of Ethereum just rockets up. But, you know, Bitcoin does exactly what it should. And I think it, you know, it's something I'll always own, and I'll always use as some store of value for part of my wealth. But like you said, it's not going to be my mental focus for the near future.
Yep. All right. Gotta end the show with some free alpha. And I will pamp my bags, and give away a little bit of the stuff that I'm interested in. I've seen a lot of these NFTs, and literally, I mean, if you go in an NFT Discord for a day, you'll see like 20 projects. So I've been snooping around this stuff for like two-ish, three-ish weeks at this point. And the coolest project I've found is the Penelope's Country Club, because it does exactly what I wanted. It offers you a reward for holding. You can stake it. There's a way to arbitrage based off of like a tradable token that can be traded easily on SushiSwap. Like it's amazing. So if one of my normie friends was like, oh, I want to buy an NFT, that would be the one that I would show them. What's some of your alpha?
It's hard, because, you know, you have this group of you know, pretty sharp 8-figure net worth professional gamblers who can turn on a dime and sell, and we're splashing around with an edge, but we could you know, change our mind and pivot. And it's hard for a normie to try to emulate us in any way. Like,
yeah, you're playing a different game.
Right. So like, I mean, my most high upside is the Tezos, I think, because
the Tezos NFTs.
Because, all right, so the way I look at it is, if you try to generally estimate the market cap of an NFT, you kind of look at like what's the ratio, or like what's the multiple of the top ones versus the floor, and then you try to estimate, you know, how much, you know, the total market cap is. So for punks, the multiple is huge between the aliens, the seven attribute, and the floor punks. I think it's probably about 250 to 400x, right? I think the seven attribute would go for around 30,000 ETH. Some of the best aliens would too. And the floor punks are going for about 100. So say, you know, 300x, right? Whereas with the Bored Apes, it might only be like 20 to 25x. Like some of the top 10 apes will go for like 700 ETH, whereas the floor ones are going for like 35 to 40, right? So with the punks, I usually say 2 times the supply times the floor price That's the market cap, right? With the apes, I might say 1.5 times the floor times the supply is the market cap, right? So with the Tezos, the Tezzers, right now the floor price is something like $3,500, $4,000. There's only 4,200 opposed to 10,000. They're not quite as stratified, I don't think, where they have a few top end ones, but I don't think they're, 300 times the multiple. So say it's like 1.8x times, supply times floor price. It's probably on the order of like $30 million for the market cap. And when you look at punks, the punk market cap is probably about $7.5 billion. The apes market cap, including the mutants and other stuff, might be like 1.5-2 billion. Something that's the premier profile picture of a network that could become one of the premier NFT networks has a market cap of like 30 million. And I don't think it'll ever have, $1 billion market cap, but it could easily have a $200 million market cap. So that's the one that, I think has the most upside, but maybe they all just go to zero too. And I'm just kind of lighting some money on fire, but I made some things that I think are asymmetric bets like that. It comes back to, it's tough to emulate, professional gamblers who are splashing around because, if the floor price is say like $3,500, that's still a lot, right? That's still a lot of money for a lot of people. But compared to some of these other projects, that's one ETH. And if you look at the market caps of the ETH profile picture products, I don't think the Tezos one would be top 25. Like I can name at least 10 that have bigger market caps, right? So that's just the one I think probably has the most upside, but probably has higher variance too. Like it could, 1/3x.
Yeah. I actually
like 1/3x.
I wanted to pick your brain a little bit about punks too, because I feel like everyone just kind of is like, okay, punks are what they are. They're just, the price is going to go up forever. Punk, they are the bluest of blue chips as it pertains to, pertains to NFTs as a whole. And it sounds like you have that bullish stance, but I how high can the punks reach be? Can this be like, Jay-Z has one, right? Odell has one. Like, can this be, can a CryptoPunk be like the thing that Jeff Bezos owns a punk? Like, to me, that's what it feels like. It feels like there is not a limit for how high the flex of owning a punk can be, but maybe that is, maybe that's like too bullish.
Yeah, I think it definitely has upside from here. Like I was saying, if say the market cap 7 billion, that would not place it within the top 25 tokens on CoinGecko, right? And some of the ones there are like Ethereum Classic, Stellar Lumens, like nobody uses this.
Ethereum stuff. Classic.
Right, yeah. It's hard. So like, here's a separate rant, but to be a truly great trader, you need to be able to be dropped into a situation, understand the logic and rules that are governing that system, and value things properly within the confines of those rules. If you start like taking yourself out of that system and looking at everything logically, you might, that's a better medium to long-term view, but you can't really value invest for some of this stuff, right? Like clearly Ethereum Classic should be worth roughly $0 market cap, but it's like 7 billion, right? So you can't, you almost have to, within the confines of crypto, compare projects, right? And I just think punks have more than top 20, top 30 upside. And the way I see it, if you start looking at like the really cool stuff, like the generative art, Fidenz is, how old are they? Like 4 months? Punks are 4 years old, right? They're 12 times as old as Fidenz are. They spawned everything and Autoglyphs too were probably the first generative art made by Larva Labs, which is their second project after the Punks. There were some older projects, but they weren't like as well done as Punks, I don't think, and they weren't they haven't spawned like the copycat movement that the Punks have. So I think Punks will really hold value extremely well. They have room to grow from here. I don't know how much. I don't think they have a 10x left in them, but I think they certainly have a 3x against Ethereum in them, which is huge, right? And some of the other ones, you know, obviously, you know, you have to look at them differently. You know, apes are not like Punks. Like, Punks are the Bitcoin of the NFT world. They're how you store some value. They're the premier project. Like, Ether rocks are also like a store of value, right? No matter how stupid you might think they
are. I know.
Are,
it's incredible. I can't even refute it, but you're right. Somehow Ether rocks are a store of value.
The Bored Apes are really not a store of value, right? They are a community, and they're a lifestyle brand, and they're a bunch of other things, but they're not as much a store of value. Like, if we hit a true bear market, maybe the Punks go down to like 40, you know, Ether for floor, 35 Ether. I don't think they'll go below 20 again. I think they've gone beyond that, but they could easily drop like 50, 60% from here. The apes might be able to drop 90%, right? And 90% would still be a pretty strong project in the grand scheme of things compared to how much some things that are dropping 99 or 100% are acting. So they're not as great a store of value, but they have different aspects. So like, you almost have to compare the NFT projects to other, you know, crypto coins and how currencies work and smart contract platforms work. So I look at the apes as Luna. Like, they are in their own little universe. They're building derivatives and things on top of it that they're airdropped. It's kind of, you know, got some real world appeal. Like, for some reason, celebrities seem to flock towards Punks and apes over some of these other ones. I mean, I heard Kevin Durant owns Penguins, but he's not the sharpest compared to some other NBA players. Like, I think Iggy owned an ape. Chef owned an ape. Chef's brother.
The NBA players being into NFTs is like my favorite wrinkle. Like, I love that. Like, it's all come full circle from Top Shot rugging us with like 900 packs at a time, and now like you know, they're all buying like pudgy penguins and stuff. It's amazing.
Josh Hart on Top Shot is still one of my favorite NFT stories.
Yeah.
Did you see what happened with it? Yeah, where like a guy gifted him a Josh Hart moment and
he sold it immediately.
Turned around and sold it for $2,000. The guy's like, "Bruce, you sold the thing I gifted you." Like, yeah, that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. But no, yeah, I mean, the celebrities, they seem to love some projects, and it seems like more of the popular younger celebrities like athletes are gravitating towards apes than some other ones. So it's more like a supreme lifestyle brand than a Bitcoin store of value. So you almost have to like look at.
It's like a sneaker drop. Like, that's what I think of some of these NFTs. It's like everyone waits in line on the Nike sneakers app to get their limited edition shoes. And it's like, well, why can't that exist online? Like, why do we have to make like, doesn't have to be physical. Like, there's no difference between a Nike sneaker, like functionally, and you know, an ASIC or something.
Right. But I do think for a lot of people, like for instance, Strasser loves to value and investor kind of try to figure out how much stuff is worth. I think that's a good idea for things you're not sure of. If you're not sure, if you don't have a strong opinion, be logical and try to take a medium long-term view, and that's a better approach than trying to tail, you know, rich poker players who are gambling with a small edge that might move faster than you because they're locked into everything going on. And if you're a week or two slow, you might get caught holding a bag. And it's tough. It's very tough to shill projects, because I mean, I still think we're early in NFTs, but a lot of these projects
project can have like a 4-hour window where it's profitable and then it's gone.
Yeah.
That's probably that would be my alpha. Is that something I've learned from minting one of these projects, going to sleep, with everyone making money and then waking up and the floor is 0.02 Ethereum and being like, yeah. Well, all right, that one's going to be a loss. And sometimes that happens and that's okay. Yeah. My buy a per. Those are they're my favorite. They're amazing. The guy who is behind them was like the OG Crypto Kitty guy, owned like the most Crypto Kitties, okay. Which is amazing. What are you going to do for NFL? You going to play this week? Are we going to see you in the Thunderdome this week?
Maybe not. I'm probably not going to play main slate. I'll maybe register for tonight. Right now I'm in the middle of an auction for a one of one. So I'm starting to do less profile picture stuff and a little more art.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to win an auction for a really cool piece. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that auction is going to go longer or shorter, but I might register for the three showdowns again and
see what happens.
Yeah.
Have you played cards at all? Have you been in the games or just that? No, literally no interest in it. Huh? Zero.
So I mean, in the past, I used to be very, very good at compartmentalizing my finances, where, I could play DFS and have like, you know, say six figures of buying a week in NFL season, and then you move to golf where I'm like, okay, I'm a winner, but I'm not as big a winner, so let me play like 2,500, 3,000 worth of buy-ins here. Oh, I can play poker. I'll play, you know, 2-5, a bunch of 2-5 tables, and that's how I compartmentalize. But once I reached a certain point with crypto, I'm like, I can't. The stakes I would be a winner at compared to the stakes I play in anything else now is, it's just like not worth the time, you know? It's really hard. It's really hard to go back.
Yeah. And the games are tougher in everything. Right. And you kind of got to go where the margins of error are larger.
There's no way I can walk into a 10, 20 PLO game and be a winner unless there's like some mega whales in it. But like, I'm not going to be sitting around like,
waiting for the text, so I mean
I'm not willing to go grind like 1-2 or 2-5 anymore, and it's hard to go play. It's hard to go back and play just for fun and not try to be a winner. Like I'm never going to try to do something where I'm a losing player, right? It's hard to ever go back and play poker. But maybe a main event here and there. I'm not going to go this fall, I don't think, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's a mindset that I just find very fascinating. And you see lots of this from guys who played poker, but like when the money's not there anymore, when the games dry up, when it's a little bit harder, you move on to the next thing and the next thing. Like, Bales has done a great job of doing that. Like he did his time in fantasy sports and now he's doing the next. And TJ, who I think you know, yep. He just like basically doesn't play DFS anymore and does. Yeah. And it's a very hard thing for, you know, a lot of people to understand, like, oh, I don't have a profession. Like my profession is using my brain to make money. And like, it's very hard for most people to think of things that way. It's not our operant conditioning at all.
Right. Right. And so this is a little bit of a hot take and it goes against something I said earlier, but I think there's a chance that in, you know, 15 or 20 years that cryptos as we know it are worthless and something new has come along that's just better, right?
That we can't even imagine, that we don't even have a conception of.
Exactly. But I'm not worried about that because from what I've seen over the past 15 years, whatever it is, we're going to be early on it, right? And as long as you're early on it, it doesn't matter that, you know, the past thing that you were early on and did well with is no longer viable. So as long as you continue staying out in front of things, you know, you're in good shape. And you don't have to be the earliest either.
And you have to keep an open mind. I mean, that's where I've been trying to tell people about crypto stuff for literally like 5 years now. And maybe they literally, and I bet you've had this happen in your real life too. You've been telling people about crypto forever. And either they're still totally resistant or the first thing they ever bought was Doge, right?
It was Doge. Multiple people were like, yeah, I had a 3X on Doge. I'm like, why did you buy Doge at 11 cents when like I thought it was worthless? And then they sold it at 35 cents. And I'm like, okay, good for you.
Well, but good like, for you, yeah.
Yeah.
You learned the you learned the wrong lesson. Is like that's what it is. It's like you looked at it and you learned the wrong lesson, which is frustrating.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there we go. That was a great show. Thank you very much for joining. Normally, I have people plug something at the end, but I don't think you have anything to plug.
Never anything.
Yeah. maybe you had a huge tennis bet the other day, right?
I didn't actually bet it. I definitely felt very strongly that it was one of the best of the year, but I didn't actually bet it. Which I mean is in a way frustrating, but on the other hand, it's like, am I really going to sit and hunt around for outs? And I started doing like EV calculations of like what would be worth it and how much EV I'm actually gaining. Right. Like how much am I making on a $10,000 bet if I think it's, you know, the line's off by 8%.
8%.
It's not that much, right? Yeah. So yeah, I'm like, I'd rather just enjoy the match and I don't need to make everything about EV. Let me tell you,
the people grinding out 8% EV for a living in sports books, those are not people you want to be friends with. Those are people who work very, very hard.
This 8% bet was probably one of the best bets of the year, for sure. I mean, like the majority of bets, they're probably winning, like, you know, you have to win 52.5%. They're probably like 54% if they're, you know, winning sports better. This was probably like a 63% type of deal where like it doesn't come around that often, but I mean it's not my, you know, it's not how I make my money, and I'm okay with just having like a public position on it is enough skin in the game.
Enough.
You know, right.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Every once in a while at RC Doubt, he will drop a little bit of free alpha every once in a while. Thank you very much for joining the show, and everyone, we'll be back next week.